November 17th, 2012 session of TeamSpeak for HPSDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've basically been mostly working, doing things at work, and have not been able to keep up with, other than the website, HPSDR. Let's move down the list. Next on the list, we have Dave, WA8YWQ.
This week I've ordered the parts for the mini circuit kit for those building Hermes single on the bare board. And so I'm waiting for those to arrive, and then I'll start shipping them out. I'm thinking about the best way of constructing the reflection bridge that would be used with Hermes to allow connectors to be put on the board and the board then put into an enclosure without having to modify the connectors. I'll probably order a few parts and do some prototypes in the next couple weeks. And so that's it for here.
Next on the list, we have Dwayne, W5PNM, shown as Mike muted. And then we have George, K9TRV.
Thanks a lot. Been busy for a few weeks with work, and just too tired at the end of Friday to show up. Sorry about that. Was busy a little bit in the last week, providing a few clues to Warren on a problem he was having in C# to see interfacing. Then early this week, Bill Diaz of the Chicago area reported an exception that KISS was throwing. I think it was earlier today we finally got him to be able to repro it within Visual Studio C# Express. With that, I was able to kind of work backwards and figure out what could cause it, then was able to come up with a synthetic repro case. My conclusion was it was due to Hermes or Metis getting a different IP address from, let's say, DHCP than it had the previous time, and they had the fast reconnect option selected. So an interesting problem, source code fixed. Also figured out that the app.config file wasn't in the source directory and what I was checking in SVN, which caused Bill and Phil grief in trying to repro the problem for me. So got that checked in. Small matter of previous version misidentifying itself. So that's all cleared up and checked in SVN and into the stable release as version 1.1.2.3 and latest. Got rid of versions 21 and 22 there because they weren't as stable as I had hoped. Of course, they're available under my development tree if you go for history in SVN. So that just leaves us with an issue having to do with KISS reporting for it in reverse power. And since I don't have an Alex currently, I welcome anyone some input on that, trying to sort out if KISS was working right with a real Alex and, say, Metis, I guess, or Ozzy, and then trying to figure out if there's a difference between the Tapper Hermes and Abby's Hermes, or is it a difference between Alex and the Anon 10's implementation of Alex? So first baseline is, did KISS ever work? And hope to hear from people if anybody's got an opinion on that later on this when we get to general talking. Otherwise, by email from my request for info from the Reflector.
Next on the list, we have Greg, ZL3IX.
Good afternoon, everybody, from Christchurch. Main thing I've achieved this week is to put my Hermes module into a box. Did a little bit of metal bending. I didn't buy a box. Just bent a bit of metal up myself, and that's worked out quite well. So that's all done now, and then I've tried the Hermes module out using Phil's VNA, which I must say is a very nice piece of work, so thanks for that, Phil. Apart from that, working on my high power MOSFET amplifier with the VLF151s, got to the stage now where I need to start on the controller module for that. So anyway, that's what I've been doing.
Next on the list, we have Henry, PA0HJA, recording in a way. Then we have Ken, N9VV, shown as mic muted. And then we have Mike, AA8K, shown as mic muted and recording. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to Ham SDR. And yes, Mike, I did show up. I was having some, apparently my headphone got unplugged, and I didn't, took me till the last minute to figure it out. After that, we have Phil, VK6APH.
I'm trying to move back from holiday mode into work mode as slowly as I possibly can. Okay, what have we been up this week? With the introduction of Hermes and a lot of new users, my user support workload has grown exponentially this week. It's getting to be quite a lot of work each day. So that's I guess it's just the initial surge, at least I hope it is. I think I'm going to have to start referring people to the reflector for help rather than, you know, ask me directly. But so far the workload is manageable, but if it gets much higher, I'm going to have to make some changes. But apart from one gentleman, I've been able to help everybody and still working through that at the moment. Thanks for the feedback on the V&A, Greg. Glad it's really okay for you. And I will try and make some time this week to look at that little bug in the frequency range. I think I might know where it is, but anyway, thanks for the feedback, and glad you're enjoying it there. This week I've been picking up Cyclops again. I've got the valuation kit for what potentially is going to be our new synthesizer, the Max 2870. I've got that running on the bench. The valuation board runs okay. It's got a USB interface to the PC, and you can poke around with all the usual registers, and it looks extremely good. It's basically a 3-6 gig VCO, which you can divide down to the final frequency. And because we're, you know, starting up at the 6 gig range, by the time you've divided down to HF, VHF, or UHF, the phase noise performance is very, very good indeed. So I've got very high hopes that this is going to be the device we end up using for Cyclops. Not only that, but it'll give us a 0-6 gigahertz range, which will be very useful. So got to do some more work on that. I've written the code for the PC to drive all the various registers. It's a very similar register layout to the ADF4350 and the 4351, which we were using previously. There are quite a lot of changes, but it looks like the code I've written for Metis to drive the synthesizer won't need to be changed. It's basically the PC code. So I'll be able to switch between the ADF4351 and the Max 2870 and do some side-by-side comparisons. So hopefully during the week I'll be able to get the evaluation board attached to the Atlas bus and start doing some real tests with Dave and Warren's software. So that's the plan for the week. That's the news from down under.
Next on the list, we have Rick, VE3MM.
I've been continuing my experiments with active antennas. I've built up a couple of 1 meter diameter magnetic loops using some water piping that has aluminum sheath inside of it, and using an amplifier that I got from LZ1AQ. It's working out really well. I've been having a lot of fun with it. The two loops are stacked vertically, and the amplifier is fed with, I'm using Cat 6 computer wiring and shielded wiring, and I just got some of that installed permanently today. So things are looking up on the receiving antenna for 160 meters. I've been playing around getting with Power SDR on 160 and getting a little bit better with using it, and it's working a lot better than I had it working previously. There, that's it on my end, Dave.
Next on the list, we have Warren in R0V.
I did have some time to do HPSDR work this week, but I don't have a lot that I think I'll report on today. I was working on the pre-distortion code primarily and did a bit of software architecture and digging into one of the more difficult algorithms that I need to put in place. So made some progress, but not a lot to write home about, as they say, at this point. George, thanks for your help. That was greatly appreciated. It's you're a real resource to the group here. So always appreciate the ability to ask you a question when I run into a particular challenge. And I think that's it for me, Dave.
Next on the list, we have Bill, KD5TFD.
Nothing to report. Bit swamped at work. We're actually at the end of year, get the product out the door mode of operations now. And unfortunately, we're a little bit behind. So that's sort of sucking up all my time these weeks. But hopefully going into the holidays, things will we'll get the product out the door and things will calm down a little bit and leave some more radio time.
Next on the list, we have Jeremy in H6Z.
Good evening, everyone. Not a whole lot to report. As I told you last week, I was getting ready to do sweepstakes this weekend and didn't like any of the log options, so I decided to write my own and did that in over the weekend and got something working that I'm fairly happy with, so that sucked up a lot of my time this week. I also got my hands on a new disk array to put into my rack here at the data center to provide services, so because I got a new 12 terabyte disk array for the Blade servers, I've been shuffling some things around, and if something goes wrong with TeamSpeak, please let me know, because it shifted earlier this morning from one machine to another, and so there may be some issues with it that may happen because of that. Other than that, just again, getting ready for sweepstakes, put up a 43-foot vertical earlier this week, so am working with that, and hopefully that'll do well in the contest tomorrow.
Next on the list, we have Bob, VE3GKM, shown as recording in a way, and that brings us to the end of the list. We'll have it open for general discussions.
George, I've just downloaded KISS Console 1.1.23 and tested it with Metis, Mercury, Penny, and Alex, and the forward and reverse power works absolutely fine. I'm running just a Penny Lane amplifier driving my linear, and with that connected to the dummy load, I'm seeing 15 or 16 watts forward and a couple of milliwatts reverse. So certainly in the Alex HPSDR configuration, it works fine, George.
Well, that I take as very good news, as I thought we'd been through this, a year or so ago. So then I guess what I need to try to do is get a representative report from somebody using a Tapper Hermes and Alex. And if that works too, then the problem isn't with KISS and it's not with Alex. And, well, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I've got a pre-production Hermes board here. Let me just swap the network connection over and see if I can I can drive that. Just a moment. Okay, well, George, Hermes works fine, but if I don't select Alex, which I haven't got an Alex board on my Hermes at the moment, I see no forward or reflected power. Is that to be expected?
Yeah, it is to be expected. That's exactly what it does. So we do convert the direct reading, that's also called the Penelope power level, but we never display it. And I'm using the same conversion rules that were used for the Alex power. And I guess I don't know if that's valid or not, but I suspect it must have been.
Yeah, I would think so, George. Okay, it's not... can I get my... I'll see what I can do. My Alex board is built into a cabinet with the rest of the OpenHPSDR board, so moving across onto Hermes is not going to be that straightforward, but I'll see what I can do over the weekend. But anyway, the previous bug we had where KISS wouldn't drive Hermes is fixed. It drives it beautifully both on transmit and receive.
Yeah, that's good. And I theorize that the problem that... Bill Diaz had, that you confirmed with the exception on startup with the Fast Connect, could also have happened with a Hermes or a Metis. I think it was just a case of the DHCP server not reassigning the same IP address, and that in fact would have caused the problem, and I kind of faked that for my my repro case, because mine always seems to get the same IP address, so that made it hard for me to reproduce on its own. I suppose if somebody just has a Penelope and doesn't show that they have Alex, I could show the Penelope forward and reverse powers. rather than the Alex powers, but it's basically Alex powers that I'm showing. So if you report to me over the weekend that with the Alex wired up to the Hermes, it works, then that leaves the problem as likely being somehow with the Anon 10 power amp.
Okay, George, I'll see what I can do for you. I've got my Metis and Hermes boards have got fixed IP addresses. I don't use DHCP because I connect my PC. I've got a separate network card on the PC dedicated for HPFDR gear, so I've got fixed IP addresses, so I wouldn't have seen that problem. Just a comment. I think if there's no Alex board connected, it would be useful to show the penny power coming out like we do in PowerSDR, so that would be a useful feature. And obviously there's no reflected power under those circumstances. We've got no bridging there. And looking at the schematic of the ANA 10, yeah, the components, the transformer, etc., that they've used in the SWR bridge are the same as Metis, same as Alex, so I'd expect the algorithm to work the same.
Yeah, okay. I think that was Bill Diaz's confirmation as well, so I'll just chill a bit and see what kind of data I get, and then we'll figure out if we have anything to fix, and if so, what. And whether it's ours to fix or not.
Okay. I wrote the automatic test equipment for Tapper for testing the boards, and we'd definitely check the analog to digital converters on the input, so that I definitely know the pins on Hermes that have ADD inputs, which would take the forward and reverse power from Alex. They definitely work on the ship boards, because otherwise they wouldn't pass the ATE testing. Be interesting to see. I can't see there's a problem. There may be. I've certainly run it in the past, George, but what's happened in the NN10, then I don't know. I haven't got one of those boards.
Yeah, I do, but it's not fired up yet. Got a little bit building and soldering and stuff like that before I'm at that point. I just finally got my Hermes working in the last day or so in order to try to repro this problem. And then, of course, I couldn't because apparently my network behaves different from Bill's, or the timing scenario is different or whatever. But the good thing is we were able to get him up on Visual Studio 2010 C# Express and get him far enough along to be able to repro the problem and get me the line number, and that was a good thing. As I mentioned in my message on the reflector, he's warming up to try to help us do a lot of the support on the newcomers that are going to come, that are coming on board with Hermes. So you might want to liaise with him a bit, Phil, and see if he can't take some of the load off you. He's just starting out on that aspect of it, but he does have a background in programming. He's retired, so he's got more time than we do. And if he can help, we ought to make use of him.
Oh, that's fine. Thanks, George. I'll definitely do that. Yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy to help folks out, but I was... Last week was disaster in trying to get anything else done. But you know, a lot of new people joining, so I'll bear that in mind. But thanks for that. A couple of other things one other thing I've got to mention is that I've been helping Doug and W5WC and Joe K5SO. They've added support for the 0 to 31 dB stepped attenuator on Hermes. And I've been with a few other people beta testing the code. It works very nicely, and a couple of little bugs need to be sorted out, which I see there's an email from Doug, which is probably going to be hopefully the final release, but works very nicely, and that's another useful function. So I did release a new version of the USB protocol during the week, which contains the data, or where in the command and control stream we control the attenuator steps, and that's now on the under SVN. So George, we probably be useful for us to add that feature for when you select Hermes. You can rather than just having preamp on off, we can actually have a attenuator setting in 1 dB steps.
Yeah, roger that. So basically, we have the preamp on-off plus the 0 to 31, if I understand things right?
No, preamp on-off is a misnomer. It's the preamp's always in. It's really the 0 to 20 dB attenuators. I think we need to tidy up KISS completely. And it's really preamp should be reverse the logic and have it, you know, 0 or 20 dB or 20 dB attenuator should it be the checkbox. So we need to change that logic. But if you're running Hermes, that there should be a box on there where you can select, you know, 0 to 31 dB.
Yeah, I got that. So it is the 0 to 31 is separate from the attenuator, the 0 or 20 dB attenuator in out?
No, it's either or. So if you're running Mercury, you'd have attenuator, you know, 0 to 20 dB checkbox. If you're running Hermes, that wouldn't appear. You'd have 0 to 31 dB.
So what are we, I haven't looked. So what are we doing in the code? Are we basically selecting the 20 dB value by default rather than, is that what we had been doing for Hermes?
For Hermes, what happened before, there's code in the FPGA that it works with the current ParisDR and KISS in that rather than, you know, be able to select 0 to 31 dB, when you set the preamp on off bit, you just turned 20 dB on and off. So you didn't have an adjustment. It was either 0 or 20 dB. What we've got now is we can adjust over the full range of 0 to 31 dB. So that code still exists. So Hermes works fine with KISS console at the moment. It's just that you either select 0 or 20 dB with Hermes, whereas it'd be much nicer to use the full 0 to 31 dB.
QSL got it. So yeah, I was just wanted to make sure we didn't have a way to get, you know, like 51 dB, which would be the 31 plus 20. So that's all clear. The real work is going to be, I think, in getting some of the spectrum display stuff to line up with regard to the AGC levels, which we adjust depending on and where the lines are, depending on whether it's the 0 attenuation or 20 dB attenuation. So that just has to be more dynamic and correct.
Actually, that brings up a good point, which I'd forgotten. So there's the 0 to 20 dB, which is just with Mercury. Then there's 0 to 50 dB if you've got Mercury and Alex. And then there's, with just Hermes, it's 0 to 31 dB. And with Hermes and Alex, it's 0 to 61 dB in 1 dB step. So the matrix has just increased in size by an order of N, I think, George.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So that may require a little bit more testing before rolling that out.
Yeah, I think we need to probably exchange a couple of emails on that one. But anyway, it does work nicely. I tested Doug and Warren's code. Doug and Joe's code during the week, and it's a nice feature. But yes, I think at the moment Doug hasn't got the save the attenuator setting by band, because he just came to the same conclusion as I did, that there's an awful lot of variables in there to chuck into the CV or the database. So I think that's in the work to do file.
Yeah, got that. By the way, Bill Diaz is one of the people who's also testing the code, so he's kind of up to speed on that as well.
Okay, thanks. Warren, I need to, and Dave, W8YWQ, I need to sort of pick up the Cyclops code again. I think the last version that you did, Dave, W8YWQ, I think had support for the breadboard or the bench layout Cyclops hardware, but it's a long while ago since I looked at it. Do you remember where we're at with that, Dave?
I think there was some support for that hardware, but I didn't have any, so I never tested it.
Okay, I'll look that out. And I know there was a checkbox where you could either select a Cyclops hardware or not. And I know there was a question on the the reflector, someone was asking whether we could use Spectrum Analyzer for 0 to 50 megs before the Cyclops code's available. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll throw in a comment. Dave's much more familiar with how the how the overall application is integrated, but I actually think it's a great idea and should certainly be achievable.
Yeah, I don't think I would call it a finished product, but if someone is interested in using it sort of as is, that'd be fine with me.
All right, I'll have a look at that. Okay, thanks very much.
And Phil, if you have questions or any issues with how the underlying library that I wrote is utilized, just drop me an email. I'll be glad to help out on that.
Thanks, Warren. I think the only issue is I've moved to Visual Studio 2008, and I think we wrote the last code in 2005, so I don't know if there's going to be any issues there.
Okay, well, that I don't know about, but I'm certainly willing to help out if you have any issues with the underlying library. I'm just not as familiar with the application level code.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. From that, what I've done at the moment is I've got the evaluation kit running on the bench, and that's fine, and it's not quite as neat and tidy the API that they provide compared with the analog devices, but it's usable. I think had I started with this evaluation board rather than the AD, I'd have been a bit stuck, but I can sort of work my way around it. The next thing I've done is just written a application, just a C# application, just a console application, so I can enter a frequency from the keyboard, and then it calculates what all the register values would be, and I get the same register values as the API gives me. So I'm pretty sure I'm doing the math correctly, so that's good. And then what I need to do is to replace the ADF4350 code in the Cyclops code with the MAX2870 register code and couple it up to the bus. So I've got a little way to go, but I must admit it's a little while since I looked at the Cyclops code, but I'm pretty sure that I've actually had it working with the ADF4350 synthesizer chip, in which case swapping to the MAX2870 should be fairly straightforward. But thanks for the offer of help. Appreciate it, Warren.
Okay, great. Sounds like you're making progress and you're set to make more, so that's good. It'll be good to get some focus back on Cyclops. I know we've all been busy, and it'll be good to see that happen.
Yes, it's the VNA was a little distraction, but with a bit of luck, we'll be able to run the Cyclops board and use it as a VNA as well, which will make a signal generator. So it'll make a very useful general purpose bit of test equipment, I think.
Yep, sounds like the VNA is a winner. Many people are interested in doing that. There's, I think, more than 60 people have expressed interest in getting the parts to build the reflection bridge.
Oh, that's great. That's great, Dave. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. The accuracy and the reproducibility is certainly I really can't find any problems with it. There is a warm up stage which is probably 10 minutes. I think it's probably perhaps the ADC warming up, where if you do a calibration, if you use a previous calibration file where the device has been on for a while, then the calibration's slightly out, but If you let the thing warm up first, or you do a calibration immediately before you do a measurement, then it seems to be pretty good.
Now, is that on reflection or transmission measurements?
I think it's on reflection. I must admit, I haven't. Most of my time has been working on reflection because there's an awful lot more math involved in that than the transmission. But I think it's probably the reflection. Dave, but I must admit I haven't paid too much attention.
Just wondering, because if it were transmission, then the temperature changes in the bridge wouldn't have any bearing. But if it is reflection, then could be the something in the bridge changing.
No, I think it's the ADC warming up. I'm looking at the raw samples, the raw INQ, well, the averaged INQ samples, which I pop up on the screen. You can definitely see they vary over time.
Yeah, so I wonder if it's an amplitude change or a phase change that you're seeing.
Well, what I can do is, that's a good point, the calibration file, I could run two calibration files and look at the error constants and do one as soon as you turn the board on and then let the board warm up and then run exactly the same calibration test again and then compare the two files. Now, that would be interesting.
That could be.
I mean, it's not a serious problem. I mean, it's still very accurate. It really shows up if you do a measurement well away from 50 ohms. If you look at a short circuit or an open circuit, then when you look at the Smith chart, rather than being exactly on the zero point or the infinity point, the readings will be slightly inside or outside the line until the board's warmed up, in which case it would tend to indicate amplitude.
Yeah, otherwise it would just be a shift around the circle. Hey, Phil, which reflection bridge have you been using?
I've got a resistive power spreader. So it's basically, it's out the AWR handbook from 1870 or something. It's just three resistors and a toroid. It's about as crude as it gets. And not even surface mount resistors, you know, resistors with really long leads. But it calibrates out very nicely. And I'm getting well over 20 dB of return loss from sort of 1 to 50 megs. But it's way behind what we can do with the Sam's bridge.
Okay, I was wondering if you had tried his or maybe even more than one of his designs.
No, the other one I've got is an N2PK, but I've got there must be a bad joint on the board somewhere because it doesn't show any directivity at all. So I've got to get that under the microscope and see what's going on. But I have had the M2PK. I've got an N2PK VNA here, and I have had that working, and that bridge worked quite well. I noticed there was a modification where they were using a transformer at the input rather than a transmission line, using the transformer as a transmission line ballon. You took the transformer off and turned it through 90 degrees. Well, I'm not sure I've actually did that or not, and some folks said that that improved things.
Just to go back to Cyclops, it's been several months since I was working on that, and I see here a whole bunch of different versions. I'm not sure which ones. If I were going to give one away for somebody else to use, I'm not sure which one I do.
Yeah, look what I've got. Just a second.
You know, Warren did several changes in threading, and I'm not sure that I was keeping up with his work there.
The one with the newest date, maybe.
Yeah, the as I recall, the threading changes should be pretty invisible at the user level, as long as you are at the application level, as long as it works.
Dave, I've got one marked 25th of May 2012. Seems to be my latest 25th of May. Oh no, forget that. I've got when I open that up, I've got Form 1 dated 28th of May. I don't know if that helps or not.
Let me look in these folders and see what I see.
And the last comment in the code is 21st of May. Adjust RBW for impulse width of selected windowing function.
Well, at least two of these directories have code changed on August 2.
Okay, I certainly haven't got that.
I guess I'll have to give them a try and see how they look. And maybe send you the latest.
Okay, so that'll work without, if you don't select the Cyclops hardware, that'll just work 0 to 50 megs with Mercury, yes?
Yes, that's, all my testing was done in that mode.
Okay, well, the 28th of May I've got definitely has, just looking through the code, definitely has support for the ADF 4351. So that's slowly coming back to me where we got, but that's fine. Which goes, what I'll probably do is just run this up. There'll be a version of Metis with Cyclops coding I need to hunt out, but I think that's probably the only change.
Yeah, that was a bit to indicate frequency change.
Yes, there was. That was right. That was the Mercury had actually received the frequency change, but there was also all the code to drive the synthesizer chip off the Atlas bus.
Now the version you have, I'm guessing, does control your Cyclops hardware.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, the versions I have might do that. I wouldn't have a way of testing that.
What I'm seeing on the form, if I look at form one, of the design, there's a button at the bottom of the screen marked ADF4351, and when you toggle it, it sets the local oscillator either low or high, and there's registers R0 to R5, and that displays the data I'm actually sending to the setup registers in the chip.
And it sounds like there's no connection to other parts of the code, such as if you do drag tuning, it would change the LO on the external hardware rather than changing the LO on Mercury.
Okay. I know there's a checkbox for Mercury or Cyclops. I'm not sure where that fits.
Yep, sounds like we'll have to do some archaeology here. Figure out what we have. What's inside these mummies?
Okay. I noticed the version I've got, the frequency slider, maybe that doesn't appear in... The frequency slider doesn't appear on the screen, although it's in the form. If you run the code, then the frequency slider doesn't appear on the display, although if you look at the form design, the frequency slider is there.
So maybe it's just been set invisible.
Yeah, it could well be, till the code's actually running. I'll just try this with... Hermes looks close enough to Medis for this to work. Let's give it a go. Yeah, it actually runs. It's complaining about finding the wrong version of code, but it's actually working as an analyzer. But no slider. Okay, well, the code runs anyway, but it looks like there's a... Looking at the design form, there's a window been placed over the display, and that's hiding the slider. That's easy enough to nudge up. Okay, well, I'll need to make a new version of Metis, and I'll make it well away from the current versions we're using, so we don't get in the problem of we've got in the past where we release a version of code where we've already used that number.
Well, just a quick trial. This one code works. I can do drag tuning. And of course, I'm working with just Mercury.
And do you have the slider?
I do, and it works.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Perhaps you could bundle it up for me, please, Dave.
Okay. And I'll send the associated code from Warren with it too, just so that they're all matched.
Now, should we look at moving to Visual Studio 2008?
I think that's what I've been using. Are you talking about moving to 2010?
2010, sorry, I meant 2010.
I wonder what we might discover when we tried that.
Well, certainly we moved KK and Paris DR there, and I wrote... the VNA code in 2010, and there was no issues of moving it. So I might just give it a try anyway. I can compile it under 2010 and see what happens. There's another comment I was going to make.
Yeah, Phil, I just looked. Looks like the code that I wrote is already 2010.
Okay, well, that's probably a good reason for moving to 2010. The version I've got, Dave, is at the top of the screen. It says Cyclops Spectrum Analyzer version 1.0.2.
Well, that's what mine says too, but I don't think they're the same.
Okay, thanks.
I haven't been very good at changing version numbers.
So, Dave, YWQ Dave, is your list for the bridge part still open?
Oh, yeah.
If you could add me to that, I'd appreciate it.
Will do. Yeah, I put out a query on the reflector asking people preferences, and all the responses I got was, take your time, do whatever enhancements. If you can put it in a box, I'd like it. So the magnitude of the project has gone up tremendously from, well, we'll just buy a batch of mini-circuit transformers and we'll send them out.
Ah, yes, that's the very definition of a weekend project.
From a simple bulk order and ship out the parts, it's moved to, okay, well, we'll do at least one, maybe two circuit board turns, and design a box and pick connectors. Oh, my.
Yeah, that does sound like a bit of scope creep.
I think it's what they always tried to prevent happening when I was working for Hewlett Packard. They'd say, no, shoot the engineer, ship the product.
Yeah, I'm getting a lesson in that myself these days. Is getting argued for building beautiful projects. They're beautiful products, but by all means, ship them today or tomorrow.
So, Dave, speaking of which, we traded some emails, a few days ago, and I'm curious if you have any latest thoughts you can share on what to do about boxes and connectors and those sorts of things.
Well, one thing about your solution was that it requires cutting off some pins, and maybe that's the way to go, but maybe there's a way of doing it without modifying the connectors. And so I've been just mulling around in my head, is there a way of twisting the topology of the circuit around without hurting it, performance-wise, that would get all the connectors on one side of the board? And then you could connect, you could put all the connectors on the board, slide the board into the case, and you're done.
Okay, so these wouldn't be the end fire connectors. These would be perpendicular to the board. Is that what you're saying?
No, the word perpendicular has problems in interpretation. the end launch connectors I'm thinking of would have the axis of the cable be parallel to the surface of the board.
Okay, so you're thinking of using end launch connectors, but trying to find some way to do that and be able to just mount the connectors to the board and drop it in the case. Is that correct?
That's what I would like. That's the ultimate cleanest solution. Whether it's practical, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. It's the ultimate cleanest solution. I don't have the answer for you, but I hope you find it.
Well, the N2PK does have two of its connectors on the same side of the box, and then they use a radius, a piece of a curve of microstrip to get those two signals to the transformer. And it seems like you could put in a third connector in between those two, and that would go directly in. So you could have the input be the middle connector, the sort of the dummy load and the unknown impedance on the two sides, and that leaves only the output going to the receiver that you need to do something else with.
Okay, I'm not sure I visualized that. I'm not sure I got it that time, Dave. But sounds like you're closer.
Well, yeah, I realized I was waving my hands around in the air, and since we don't have any video, that didn't help.
Well, more power to you on figuring it out.
I guess my question at the moment would be, if you could put the input to the bridge as the middle connector, the dummy load, the sort of the reference impedance, and the test impedance on either side of that, would it cause problems if this coax that comes out of the ballon with the beads on it, would there be problems if that were not attached to the board? Could it just be up in the air, sort of, and going somewhere else to some other wall on the enclosure?
User disconnected from your channel.
Yes, I see your point. Well, you know, the boy, I wonder if there's a way to at least tie it down somehow or other. I'm not sure exactly what you use to do that, but having it just be sort of loose, I don't know, that somehow bothers me, although I don't really appreciate the weight of the beads and how much they might move around and how much that might affect the RF characteristics.
Yeah, I guess part of it is I don't quite understand how the fields are working in that coax and balun, coax and bead balun. Like, what's the influence of the ground plane near that?
Yeah, exactly, and that that went through my mind as well. And you know, at the frequencies that we're talking about, it doesn't take a lot of capacitance to cause some effect. Now, whether that's a material effect, I don't know.
Yeah, well, immediately we're thinking about this as being 0 to 55 megahertz, but it would be nice if the bridge itself were usable considerably higher than that.
Yeah, you know, I would think at 0 to 55 megahertz, you wouldn't have to worry about it that much, but, you know, like you say, we'd like the bridge to be usable much higher.
Yeah, well, Sam's interest was in a bridge that he could use up to a gigahertz. So that was his criterion. Well, I think I'm going to order a few parts. And there was one fellow suggested an alternative to a mini circuits part, one that was available through Mauser, or Mooser, or however you want to pronounce it, in single quantities. I want to look at that part, just compare its characteristics and see, you know, who knows, it might even be better than the mini circuits part. But anyway, a few parts, and then I can try some experiments to just move that coax and beads around relative to a ground plane and see what changes I get.
Certainly sounds interesting. So once you get this figured out, are you going to tackle an RF, an IV sensor?
Isn't that what the N2PK uses?
Well, yeah, you know, I sent you a picture of the of both a bridge and a an IV sensor that I use with the N2PK. And the IV sensor, I don't know how you'd build one to go up to a gigahertz. That might be a little bit tough for a homebrew kind of project. But for you know, the 0 to 50 megahertz sort of range, it's a nice little tool to have, and I use it just in place of a regular bridge many times.
Do you find cases in which it works better than the Wheatstone bridge configuration?
Yeah, I do. You know, if you're trying to measure Q, for example, where the resistance is very low compared to the reactants, or you know, situations like that, I find it works incredibly better, and it seems to work equally well for all other cases.
Very interesting. Well, these mini circuits transformers have a pretty wide frequency range, so that IV configuration might be doable to fairly high frequency.
Well, it might be. Of course, the one for the N2PK, the one I built, doesn't use the mini circuits transformers. I wound those transformers, which was a bit of a job because it's number, I don't know, I've forgotten now, it's like 30 turns of number 30-something wire for the primary, and then I have a Faraday shield in there, and then like one turn of number 30 for the secondary, or, well, primary, secondary, it depends on which transformer. And I insulated the, I was a little nervous about insulation. So I insulated the Faraday shield, which is a little piece of copper with Teflon tape, and winding those two transformers, you know, that was a pretty good project in itself.
Sounds like you're using pretty close to hair-thin wires.
Yeah, exactly. And the core is a binocular core that's about a quarter of an inch square.
Those guys like to build chips and bottles, I take it.
Never tried that.
I missed your comment, Bill.
It's about this stage, Bill. It's about this stage Bill says something about character building.
No, there was always the knock on the guys who build their own boards always took the knock of, you know, well, why do you do it when it's, you know, so much, you know, small scale work? And some folks compared it to building, you know, ships and models. It's enjoyable, and it seems Warren's a member of the Ship in a Bottle Club.
Well, I never really thought of myself that way, Bill, but thanks.
No, it's. I mean, it's. It sounds interesting to do the small work. I mean, I know people whine about winding, you know, even moderate sized toroids, and I sort of like it. It's peaceful. It just sort of occupies your mind or gets your full attention.
Yeah, it's therapeutic.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. Well, I'm going to go find myself some dinner, gentlemen. Good talking to y'all, and don't know if I'll catch you next week. It's Thanksgiving here in the U.S., so good, fair chance I'll be out Friday evening, but if not, I'll wander in here.
73, Bill. Have a happy Thanksgiving. I'll probably be here.
Everybody else as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go too. I think it's dinner time here. And for all the U.S. people, happy Thanksgiving.
Well, 73, and I'm going to be out as well. I probably will be here next week.
73, Dave and Warren, and have a happy Thanksgiving and a good week to all. I think I'll head out myself. Well, Phil, I will do a little testing with this Cyclops here just to make sure that there's nothing terribly bad, and then I'll package it up and send it to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dave. I've had to change the version of the code I got a little bit because I've got different versions of Hermes code running, etc. But I can't get that horizontal slider to appear, but I'm a long way behind you in terms of revision, so that'll be great. Thanks very much.
One question I have is regarding Mercury firmware. I have not changed mine from several months ago when it was a Mercury that could handle four receivers. And there's probably, I don't know, haven't really kept track of the changes since then, whether the new ones would be compatible.
Yeah, the feature of notifying when Mercury has received a new frequency has that's made its way into the latest releases. The latest release, I think it's 3.3, but I could be wrong, has two receivers. We ran into a problem with A, filling up the FPGA, and B, getting timing closure to be met. So I think for the time being, it's just two receivers, and I think it's 3.3, and that's what I'll be using to further develop Cyclops, Dave.
Okay. Well, just wanted to bring that up as a potential issue.
Great. Thank you.